Good evening, everybody, or good morning if you're listening in the morning. There's a big Minnesota Timberwolves-Oklahoma City Thunder game being played Tuesday night in Oklahoma City. There'll be a new face on the bench, Ryan Saunders, son of the late Flip Saunders, has taken over, and he took over because Tom Thibodeau was fired on Sunday. Fired after a loss, of all things, fired after a win. The team that lost was the Los Angeles Lakers. Yeah, they didn't have LeBron, but that's still a quality win. And I'm joined on the program today by Chris Hine from the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Chris, welcome to the show, and let's get right to it. What went wrong in Minnesota where management felt that they had to fire Tom Thibodeau after the team had played pretty well after the Jimmy Butler trade?
Yeah, it seemed like things were going well, at least in the immediate aftermath of that trade. They were 9-3 in the first 12 games after the trade. But I really think what happened in the month of December was the tipping point that ultimately cost Thibodeau his job. There were some losses in there, losses to Phoenix, losses to Detroit where they blew a late lead at home, a loss to Atlanta at home, and a loss to an Anthony Davis-less New Orleans team on New Year's Eve that really became the critical mass that caused owner Glenn Taylor to pull the trigger on firing Thibodeau. And, you know, these things don't just happen in a vacuum. Obviously, this set of losses that they suffered in December, falling down the standings, was kind of the tipping point for years, multiple seasons here of frustration, of tensions between Thibodeau and the business side of the organization, and the Jimmy Butler fiasco, which, you know, ultimately I think got them off to such a slow start that inevitably became too far of a hole for Thibodeau to dig himself out of, and kind of his handling of that situation, both on and off the court, kind of torpedoed the Wolves early in the season, which led to his downfall the other day. So, you know, yesterday's game, the decision was made before yesterday's game that this was going to be happening. Yesterday's game played no role in that. It was kind of the sum total of what happened over the first half of the season here.
Yeah, and from what you could discern, how blindsided was Tom Thibodeau by what happened?
I believe pretty much very blindsided. He was actually in a very, for him, a very good mood after yesterday's game. And he was kind of joking around with reporters in his post-game press conference. He was smiling. He was laughing. You know, basically didn't seem to think that this was coming. And I think it took everybody and reporters by surprise, you know, firing a coach after a 22-point win. But like I said, this decision was made, I think, you know, in the last week or so. And, you know, shortly after his press conference, the CEO, Ethan Kasten, and Scott Layden let them know of Glenn Taylor's decision. Taylor was not there yesterday. And, you know, now they move forward with Ryan Saunders as the youngest head coach in the NBA right now.
And I'm curious because these things go down. And sometimes they walk the coach out to his car with a security guard. Sometimes they say, don't even pack up your office. We'll pack it up for you. Was there a chance to talk to Tom after he got fired, or did everybody kind of learn of it through the PR department and a press release?
No, the word started leaking out. I would say I think it was about maybe 7 o'clock. Central time yesterday, and the game and everything around it had wrapped up about 5 or so, maybe it was closer to 7:30. But it was a few hours after the game. After the word started trickling out, I was still in the press room, and a couple other writers were still in the press room working. So I went out and looked in the hallways to see if anybody was still there. Nobody was there. So everybody had dispersed. No players were there. No staff was there. So it was empty in Target Center around that time that word started tripping out. So after he had found out, you know, Thibodeau must have, you know, gotten out of the building before the word started leaking out.
Yeah, it's no fun thing when coaches lose their job. But Adrian Wojnarowski wrote in his ESPN.com story that Scott Layden is going to remain in place for now, but his future remains uncertain. What about that? You know, Scott was sort of reporting to Tibbs, but there was always a little question about who was in charge. And Scott's a pretty shrewd negotiator when it comes to making trades, although what he did with Pat Riley didn't go over that well. He was able to make a nice trade with the Sixers, and the Sixers are now having their own set of problems with Jimmy Butler on the team. But Dario Saric and Robert Covington are a couple of nice additions. Covington being injured the last couple of games certainly couldn't help. But what about Scott? Is Scott on thin ice as well?
That seems to be the consensus around here. I asked Glenn Taylor about that yesterday when I had the chance to talk to him, and his response was that, he's under contract, which isn't exactly a ringing endorsement, from the owner. So I think that situation is still to be decided. I would say that it's hard to kind of handicap these things, but given that Layden and Thibodeau were here at the same time, Layden was Thibodeau's guy when Tibbs was brought in as the president of basketball operations. So you just wonder if you're looking to change the culture, to change the direction of the organization here, does it make sense to keep the same GM or do you want to bring in somebody new for that position? One thing that Taylor did say is that he's not going to go back to the coach / GM model where that person is the same person. So going forward for the Timberwolves, there's going to be a GM and there's going to be a coach and they're going to be two separate people.
So tell us a little bit about Ryan Saunders. He's the son of Flip Saunders. I got an email from him once when I was at ESPN. He said, "Hey, thanks for writing that nice story about my dad." But he's a young man and doesn't have a lot of head coaching experience, but he's going to get a little bit of a trial by fire tomorrow. He's got to coach against Russell Westbrook and Paul George, two of the top MVP candidates in the NBA. Tell us about Ryan and what kind of a guy he is and how equipped he is to step into this job.
Yeah, I think there's a different style of approach that Ryan is going to take to this job than Thibodeau did. Ryan is much more of a, I think the players would probably tell you, a communicator. He kind of gets to know the players on a one-on-one level. That's not always the way Thibodeau likes to operate. There's definitely going to be a change in style from that aspect. A few of the players that spoke today, like Carl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins, said they have great relationships with Ryan. He's very open. He's very talkative. You can come to him and say almost anything. So from that aspect, I think it's going to be good relationships with the players off the court. Now, you don't know, once they start playing a few games, if they lose a couple games, how is that all going to snowball off the court? We don't know. But for now, I think that's the one thing that he has going for him is that he does have a strong relationship with a lot of these players. And it's something that he's probably going to need as a young head coach that, maybe he gets these guys to play for him in a way that maybe was missing with Thibodeau.
Interesting. Again, just reading some of your coverage and reading some of the coverage around there, there's some concerns that that Tom Thibodeau wasn't enough of a people person to help the Timberwolves sell tickets. They're 29th in the NBA in attendance through 19 home games, and their attendance has fallen back to the low levels seen before last season. That's from your story, Chris. So how empty is the building?
there are some nights, especially early in the season, when it was actually really empty. I remember, I think it was the second home game when Butler was still on the team, and I think the announced attendance was about 9,000, and that was the announced attendance.
Mm-hmm.
It looked emptier than that. And this was like maybe a Monday or a Tuesday night in October. So I think the drama around the team just drove people away, whether it was Butler or whether it was angst with Thibodeau. He's been booed every introduction. since the beginning of the season. And, you know, it got to the point where the Timberwolves now, at least, you know, while he was here, they would blast music immediately after the PA announcer would say, and your head coach is Tom Thibodeau, and they would immediately start blasting music to cover up the boos that would come from the crowd. So, you know, there was a lot of fan angst and apathy, I think, around Butler and around Thibodeau around that time. After the trade, there was a lot of optimism immediately after the trade. Like I said, they went 9-3. They had, over that time, the third best defensive rating in the NBA. But the last few weeks, they've kind of regressed back to the team they were before the trade, even though there's new personnel there, and they were losing games that they probably should have won. And like I said, that was probably the ultimate tipping point for Thibodeau's firing.
Okay. Well, the Timberwolves go into Oklahoma City tomorrow night to play the Thunder. After that, they got a back-to-back at home with Dallas and New Orleans. Certainly what you would consider two winnable games. What's the local response been to this move? Are people supporting Glenn Taylor on this and people looking for a fresh start with Flip Skid?
Yeah, I think that there was a lot of angst with Thibodeau. So I don't think that there are too many Wolves fans that are sad to see him leave. I think right now it's just a lot of uncertainty. I don't know that the fan base necessarily trusts every move that Glenn Taylor makes with the franchise. So I think they're a little skeptical in that regard. I think they're hopeful that Ryan Saunders maybe is competent and comes through here over the second half of the season. But I just think that there's a lot of uncertainty. I don't think that there's too many people upset that Thibodeau is gone, but I don't think that they're exactly jumping for joy now, thinking that the season is saved and the franchise is saved because he's out the door now.
And what about the roster? Certainly Karl Anthony Towns is your block. You're rocking your block, and that's the guy you build around. But the guy who's on the active roster now, who's second in scoring, is Derrick Rose, which nobody would have predicted going into the season. Anthony Wiggins is at 17.3 points per game. Covington has you know, been hot and cold, as he always is, but he's at about 15 points a game. And Jeff Teague's only scoring 12 a game, but he's just handing out 8.5 assists. And Taj Gibson is Taj Gibson. He's a glue guy. Dario Saric, though, hasn't fit in all that well, has he?
It's been up and down with Saric. You know, it's been an adjustment for him. He was starting in Philadelphia. He's coming off the bench here. His shot has been hot and cold. There's some nights where his three-point shot looks great, and there have been other nights where he's struggled with that. But I think he fits well in the sense that he seems to do a lot of little things well, and he hustles and he plays hard. So I think from that sense, he's fitting well. It's just that he's been struggling with his shot.
And Chris Hine, again, for our listeners, you can follow him on Twitter. He's at Christopher Hine. He's the beat writer for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. There are some tradable contracts on this team, one of which is Jared Bayless. And there was a lot of talk earlier in the season that Jeff Teague was the guy who was going to get moved, possibly to Phoenix. Phoenix remains without a starting point guard, or a starting point guard that's considered an NBA caliber starting point guard. What are your thoughts on whether Scott Layden is going to continue to shake up this roster as the season moves along? And again, we're 1 month away exactly here on January 7th
exactly,
from the NBA trade deadline.
Yeah, you know, that's the question, isn't it? We're 4 weeks out. The Wolves are two games out of the eighth spot. And Taylor yesterday in my talk with him said that he wants to make the playoffs. So, you know, if they play well over these next 4 weeks, maybe they aren't sellers at the deadline. Maybe they're buyers. Maybe they're looking to make a push to get into the playoffs. And, you know, in the overall NBA landscape, you never want to be you know, just mediocre or just, you know, good enough to get into the playoffs. But when you're sitting here and you're the Timberwolves and you've only made the playoffs once since 2004, getting to the playoffs in this market is a big deal. So if you can get there, you want to get there, at least if from Glenn Taylor's perspective. So I think there's a lot uncertain right now. They have a lot of, like you mentioned, a lot of tradable contracts on this team, and there are other guys too, like Rose. You know, do you deal him at the deadline and try to get what you can for him? He's on a one-year deal. A guy like Anthony Tolliver, who's a three-point specialist that might be able to help a contender off the bench. Gibson is in the last year of his deal. You know, so there are a lot of parts that could be moved at the deadline. It's just a matter of, do the Wolves look at their situation 4 weeks from now and say, yeah, we should probably get what we can instead of trying to make a push to make the playoffs? And given how playoff-starved they are here, I think the preference is to try and go for it and get in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's tough out in the Western Conference. The Lakers right now are sitting in eighth place. You didn't expect that from LeBron James' team, but LeBron's out for a while with that groin injury. Then the Jazz are at 20-20. They're underachieving, but you expect them to get things to right their ship and move in. So when you look at the Western Conference standings and you know you do have 14 teams in contention, which of the teams that you think are going to drop out and especially the ones that are on the outside looking in, and which of the ones do you think that can sustain and take it all the way into April and stay in contention until that last night of the season?
Yeah, it's a fascinating question. It's a fascinating dynamic because you're going to have so many, I think, teams that might be playoff caliber teams if they were in the Eastern Conference that are left on the outside. Looking at where teams are now, it's kind of hard to bet against the teams you thought that were going to be there at the beginning of the year, right? So teams like San Antonio and Portland and Houston, you know, they seem to be on track now and at least, you know, should be there at the end of the year. Sacramento, still a young team. You don't really expect them to grab an eight seed. You know, it looks like Memphis has fallen off since their strong start. Dallas is still, you know, is still a team in rebuilding mode. So I almost look at the standings now and I'm like, if you could freeze the standings now, I think those, to me, those are your best eight playoff teams, I think, right now. If you had to make me pick, maybe Utah sneaks in there. You know, we'll see if the Clippers can stay on the right side of the ledger here. But I kind of like the eight teams and where they're at now. Once the Lakers get LeBron back, I expect them to move back up if he's only out another week or so. But I think it's just so hard when you're on the outside to make up enough ground, just given the demands of the NBA schedule, given that everybody plays each other. It's hard to make up that ground on a nightly basis.
Yeah, you've really got to get on a hot streak and get on a roll and maintain. I was at the Mavericks Sixers game on Saturday night down in Philly and talking with some of the guys who cover the Mavs. They're like, this is what we get every single night. Every game is a toss-up. You know, it's fun to cover Doncic, but the guys on the team, Harrison Barnes is a real solid player, but on any given night, all you can expect is the unexpected because they're a 500 team with big aspirations, but, you know, DeAndre Jordan has sort of underperformed, and you know, J.J. Bray has been good off the bench. Dennis Smith's run a little bit of hot and cold. They're a tough team to figure out, but getting back to the Wolves, let's say things start to fall apart and they say, okay, we got to shake up the roster and we got to start rebuilding. They don't have a lot to give away. They don't have any first-round draft picks coming in from other teams. They got a second-round draft pick coming in from Miami, which it's going to be somewhere probably in the 40s. And then they got a second-round draft pick coming in 2022 from Philadelphia. You know, that's really that's not a sweetener. That's more of a throw-in in a trade. So
right.
If you're the Timberwolves and you're looking to deal, what's your biggest asset that can be moved? Would you say that? I wouldn't say it's Wiggins, but I might say it's Teague.
Yeah, Teague might be the guy. If he can show over these next few weeks here that he's healthy, but I think that was the biggest thing with him over the last few weeks was he was trying to play through an injured ankle throughout much of December, and they finally reached a point where he wasn't playing well. He was really in pain, and they just said, you know what, we're just going to shut it down here until you're healthy. And he's healthy enough to play again.
And he's playing well. The last two games that he's played, he's played really well. So if he can show something over the next 4 weeks, you might be able to move him. The thing with him that complicates his deal is that he does have a player option for next year. So, you know, is a team going to be getting him as a rental, or is a team going to be getting him for a year plus? So that's the complicating factor with him. And, you know, I don't think that you could trade the Wiggins contract for really anything valuable, given the kind of player that he is. He's not producing at the level of a max player, at least from an efficiency standpoint. So I don't think you can trade that. You know, a guy like Sarge would attract a lot of attention, I think. But I think the Wolves definitely want to keep him as part of the future here. So, yeah, I would agree with you that Teague might be among the most desirable, but will he play well enough to up his trade value here over the next month is the big question.
Yeah, he's up there around nine assists, eight point something assists, and there aren't that many guys that high in the league. Of course, Russell Westbrook is leading the league, and he's averaging a triple-double. He's got a dozen of them. Again, you know, so Teague's going to have to deal with Westbrook tomorrow night. We'll see how that goes. Paul George has also been playing off the charts good in that for that team. But let's look at some of the odds around the league, the odds to win the NBA championship. And it gives me an opportunity to remind everyone that this podcast lives on GetMoreSports.com. But the guys paying the bills are out of Costa Rica, where some of the top offshores in the world are located. And remember, gambling is not illegal in the United States anymore. It hasn't been since May 14th. The laws change. The laws are different state by state. Where I live in New York, there is no law right now. Next door in New Jersey, there's a law, and people are gambling on their phones. In Minnesota, I was talking with Chris before we went on the air, and he said he thinks it's going to be a slow process to get a law through the state legislature regarding sports gambling. But in the meantime, you can go to mybookie.com or betdsi.com, or overseas, it's betdsi.eu. And if you use the bonus code BBALL1000, that's BBALL1000, they'll match your first deposit up to $1,000. So that's $2,000 you get to play with, and then you get to throw some money around and make a few bets. And right now, Chris Hine on the board. Obviously, the Golden State Warriors are a heavy, heavy favorite to win the title. They've been that way since the summer. But you look around the West, right now the Rockets are 10-1. The Lakers are 18-1, and the Thunder are 22-1. And then the one that really gets me, because nobody seems to be taking them seriously, the Denver Nuggets, sitting in first place in the Western Conference, are 33-1 to win the NBA Finals. 33-1. What do you think of that?
That seems like pretty good odds to me for the number one seed in the West right now, doesn't it? I mean, they're unproven in the playoffs. They didn't make the playoffs last year, but I think any time you might be able to grab the potential one seed and home court advantage, you know, and see some fresh blood in the playoffs, maybe a team that the Warriors maybe haven't seen before. It seems like a pretty, you know, at least for the value, a decent bet there, don't you think?
Yeah, I've been touting the Nuggets all year long. I love Jokic, and you're right. They missed the playoffs last year, but they missed the playoffs on the last night of the season. And they've maintain that first place spot despite a slew of injuries. So I think a lot of people in the NBA are sleeping on the Denver Nuggets. Charles Barkley, though, is not one of them. He said, I'm on the Jokic for MVP bandwagon, and I'm staying there. Another number that's on the board is the Minnesota Golden Gophers. They are at 200-1. 2,000-1. And Rick Pitino Jr. is the coach there. Rick Pitino Jr. has obviously had his problems with that Gopher team, and Rick Pitino Sr. is now coaching in Panathinaikos in Greece, but his name is out there for the UCLA coaching job. What about Rick Pitino as a coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves if the thing with Ryan Saunders doesn't work out?
Rick Pitino, senior or junior?
Senior.
Senior. That's definitely one I haven't heard. You know, I think the name that has been thrown around a little bit is it has been Fred Hoiberg, and that would make sense given Hoiberg's ties to the organization as a player and also as a front office. I think he was VP before moving on to Iowa State. And I think that familiarity means a lot to Ron Taylor. So I don't know that he's necessarily that familiar with the Pitino family the way he would be with a guy like Hoiberg. And so I think in any move that would play a large role. So if it doesn't work out with Saunders, Hoiberg would seem to be a logical next step in that sense.
Yeah, Hoiberg's name has been out there a lot. Good guy. Did some nice work with the Bulls. On the board for tomorrow night, the Oklahoma City Thunder are favored by 8 at home over the Minnesota Timberwolves. Seems like a valid number, but the Timberwolves are not all that horrible. I don't think Covington is due back, but
he's not.
Timberwolves in a lot of ways still have a deeper team than the Thunder. Thunder is still looking for some consistent outside shooting off the bench. They're not getting it from Alex Abrines. Andre Roberson is still not back, and he makes them a better team defensively. What do you make of that line? Right about on the money, or maybe Oklahoma City's gonna kill them, or Minnesota's gonna have a chance to win?
You know, it's hard to get a feel for it, because here's the thing: the Timberwolves have been awful on the road this year, especially against Western Conference teams. I think they're like 1-14 or something like that against Western Conference teams on the road. Or maybe 1-13, but you know who that one win was against? Oklahoma City. for Christmas. So and they beat Oklahoma City in that building last year as well. So I don't know what it is about playing in Oklahoma City with Minnesota, but they seem to play well in that building. And you don't know the effect of a new coach, or are the Wolves going to come out extra fired up, sometimes you see that with a new coach, that in the first few games, the team kind of rallies and punches above its weight a little bit in the first few games after a new coach comes along. So hard to get a feel for that. Under normal circumstances, I would say, the Thunder might be the better wager there, but it's like, it's just hard to get a feel for how the Wolves are going to play in that building, given their recent success there and given the coaching change. So that might be
right.
That might be.
without Covington being available to guard Paul George could go a little bit nuts, which he's been doing of late.
Yes.
Chris Hine, and again, we're joined by Chris Hine from the Minneapolis Star Tribune. You're well-versed in hockey as well. Let's start with the team that plays up there, the Minnesota Wild. Right now, they're 33-1 to win the Stanley Cup, and it's pretty wide open. There's no prohibitive favorite right now. The Tampa Bay Lightning are number one, and the Maple Leafs are number two. Certainly, the folks up in Toronto would be happy to have the Stanley Cup for the first time since the 1950s. But when you look around the NHL, who do you see as a team that everyone's sleeping on?
I haven't seen the rest of the odds. It's hockey's always a funny thing, but I've always been consistently impressed the last few years with Nashville. And I covered, so my background in hockey is I covered the Blackhawks for 3 seasons for the Chicago Tribune. So I got to watch the NHL and kind of follow the NHL up close. And just what I've seen from Nashville the last few years, they've been one of the most consistent franchises in the league. One of their roadblocks, in recent years was they can never quite get over the hump in the playoffs. Well, they made the cup final appearance 2 seasons ago, ran into a very good Winnipeg team early in the playoffs last year and got knocked out. But I like Nashville. I like their defense. I think they have some of the best defensemen in the league. They've got enough scoring. So to me, they're a solid bet to be there at the end of the year and to potentially make a playoff run that you could probably get good odds on. I will say you know, hearing those odds for the Wild, they're the same odds, if I'm not mistaken, that the Denver Nuggets have to win the NBA title, 33-1, correct?
That's correct.
I would think the Nuggets would probably be a better bet than the Wild, who are perennial playoff floppers in a sense, where it seems like they only get through a round or two and then they're out of it. That would be kind of my take there. I like Nashville, and to another extent, Winnipeg is a solid bet. There's a lot of talent on that roster as well. And whoever kind of emerges from that playoff matchup, given the wonky way the NHL sets up its playoffs, I think would stand a good chance of advancing to the Cup final this year from the West.
Yeah, the teams you mentioned, the Predators are third on the board right now at 10-1, and the Jets are the Winnipeg Jets are 11-1. The Caps and the Golden Knights are both at 12-1. But there's really no clear cut favorite the way there is in the NBA, where you know Golden State Warriors are -147 to win the title. It means you got to wager $147 to win 100. NHL's a lot more wide open. The long shots are the LA Kings at 150 and the Ottawa Senators at 150. But let's turn it back to the NBA and Tom Thibodeau, Chris. And Tom's obviously a great coach. You know, if you ever want to find Tom Thibodeau, he's easy to find. You just go to his office at 4 o'clock in the morning and he's in there watching tape. And he was that way in Chicago and he was that way in Minnesota. Is he going to have a landing zone sometime in the NBA, or is he sort of worn out his welcome, in your opinion?
You know, we were talking about that a little bit today, and it's tough to say. You have a job, you get fired from one job, you get another job, you get fired from that one. You know, the only sport where this usually happens a lot, where you get another head job right away, is the NHL, from what I've experienced. I don't know what the next move is for Thibodeau in terms of, you know, his connections around the league. I don't see why he couldn't be an assistant again for somebody if he wanted to go that route. I don't know if he would entertain any inklings about the college game. He's been around the pro game his whole career. So I see him sticking in the NBA long term here, but I feel like coaching is something that's kind of in his blood, whether it's as a head coach or an assistant. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him on an assistant bench somewhere. You know, probably not for the rest of this season, obviously, but perhaps next season. It's tough to say.
And it's tough for these coaches when they don't have coaching as part of their lives. I know Rick Pitino a little bit, and speaking with him, he's like, I get up every morning and I'm ready to go to the gym, and I don't have a gym to go to, and I just don't know what to do with myself. I go to the racetrack and I work with my horses and I hang out with friends and I watch games on TV. But when your life is built around getting up and going to the gym first thing in the morning, working out with players, watching films, doing game prep, then that rug is pulled out from you. You just kind of don't know what to do with yourself. And the advice I always give a lot of guys is go take a vacation. You know, if there's someplace, go see the pyramids in Egypt. Go, you know, go to Iceland and see the Northern Lights. It's summertime in Australia. Go down there and go surfing on the beach with Perth. You can run into Luke Longley. If you were to give some advice to Tom Thibodeau what to do with themselves over the next few months, would you tell him, hey, take a job in TV? Or because certainly he would do well on TV. Or would you say, you know, take a vacation and chill out?
Maybe a little bit of both. You know, take some time away. I think when you come from a stressful situation like that, I think a break is always warranted. And he did that after Chicago, too. You know, he took a year off before he jumped back into coaching, and he traveled. It seemed like his traveling was all basketball related. He went to visit different coaches and different teams and kind of pick the brains of other coaches. So he did take a year off before. It's not like he'd be, you know, anxious to just jump right back into a gym again. I think eventually he will, and that itch will probably return, because it usually does for all coaches. But I could see him, you know, taking another year off. He's certainly going to be getting paid for for a while here. He was only at the halfway point of a 5-year deal, so he's owed a lot of money. It's not like he has to take another job right away. So he can certainly afford the time to sit back, relax, look at the NBA landscape, and maybe be picky about the next situation he wants to go in, and not have to be so, you know, not have to be desperate to kind of jump right back into the first job that comes after him.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Tom Thibodeau has any vacation skills.
you got to
develop them from time to time. You grab a book, you get on a plane, you pack a swimming suit, you go to the beach, and you shut off your phone, and it works. You come back and you feel great a week later. But let's turn back to a couple more NBA lines that are on the board. And the one where there's been the most movement recently, Chris, is the MVP race. That's the column that I'm writing today. James Harden had been made the favorite. Now he's co-favorite with Giannis Antetokounmpo. They're both at plus 175. LeBron James is at plus 550, or also known as 11-2. Steph Curry's 9-1. Kawhi Leonard's 10-1. Anthony Davis 11-1. Joel Embiid 14-1. Kevin Durant 16-1. Russell Westbrook 28-1. Then Jokic and Lillard are both at 50-1. When you hear those odds, what do you say to yourself? If I was to put down my money, who do I like as MVP, especially given the prices?
I mean, Jokic at 50-1 sounds pretty good. You know, especially considering Denver is on path to be the one seed. You know, that's pretty. If you're going by kind of what people have voted for traditionally, you know, the team success component of an MVP candidate plays a big role. And I think the narrative of an MVP plays a bigger role than the stats necessarily. So if the Nuggets can keep this up, you know, maybe maybe Jokic's candidacy gains a little more steam as we head towards the home stretch here. I just find it always fascinating how the narrative and not the numbers tend to drive the MVP consideration. And I look at Russell Westbrook as example A for that, where, you know, he's averaging essentially the same stat line he was 2 years ago when he won the MVP, but yet we don't talk about him as the MVP or a really serious MVP candidate this season. Or last season, for that matter, even though he's doing the same thing that he did 2 years ago.
Yeah, he's averaging a triple-double again, and it's not as you know, voracious of a triple-double as the one that he had 2 years ago, but guys just, you know, Oscar Robertson averaged a triple-double, and everybody said, nobody will ever do that again, and now Russell does it year after year after year. I'm on board with you with Jokic. His odds have dropped. I put $10 on him in the preseason at 100-1. And then I've seen his odds drop down to 60, and now they're at 50. And when you're voting for MVP, you look for the best player on the best team, and especially if it's a team that overachieved. And right now, the Denver Nuggets and Nikola Jokic fit all those categories. Nobody expected them to be first. And you know, this guy's a freak. He's a point center, impossible to guard on the perimeter. He's extraordinarily difficult to guard on the inside. And the question is, can Denver sustain and stay in the number one spot when Oklahoma City is right on their heels and Golden State is right on their heels? What do you think of that?
They've done it halfway through the season, and I like the way the roster's built. And as long as he's healthy, I don't see why they couldn't be, you know, one of the top teams in the West. I like where they're at, and you know, as we said, you know, you have a team that's overachieving compared to expectations, and that should draw a lot of eyeballs towards Jokic in terms of MVP consideration, especially if they beat out teams like the Warriors or the Thunder for that one seed.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And Giannis has been at the top of the board all season, and for good reason. But the Bucks are a 3 or 4 game losing streak away from fallen pretty far behind the Raptors, and then that's a lot of territory to make up. They lost to the Raptors the other night and lost a chance to sweep the season series, but there's still a lot of basketball to be played. Like I said earlier, we're a month out from the trade deadline, and then again after the trade deadline we have February free agency. The guys who didn't get traded who are playing for bad teams will get bought out of their contracts, and then they'll sign with playoff teams. I think case in point is Jamal Crawford. He's on a minimum right now, and he's on a January 15th trade restriction. So I think somebody will probably try to trade for him. But should that not happen, he's an easy buyout guy. And then, you know, he can come into a team that needs a shooter. Philly comes to mind. I know he'd love to play for Golden State or the Lakers. And, you know, he's just one of many. There's Vince Carter is playing for the Atlanta Hawks. The oldest player in the league could still come in on a playoff team and give you 10 minutes off the bench and hit a big shot. So we all love to jump to conclusions early in the season as to who's going to win it all. But February free agency impacts the NBA so much. You look what the Sixers did last year, getting Ersan Ilyasova and Marco Bellinelli in February free agency. Those guys were game changers for the Sixers.
Yeah.
Help them win 16 games in a row at the end of the year. So, again, this is Chris Hine joining me on the show today. You can follow him on Twitter at Christopher Hine. He's the beat writer for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Chris, is there anything you'd like to plug? A book you wrote or a charity that you support?
I haven't written any books. Maybe that'll change. That'll change one day. I guess in terms of a charity, you know, I had when I was very young, 12, 13 years old, a friend of mine died of a brain tumor. So always, you know, like children's hospitals, Make-A-Wish Foundation, places like that, always near and dear to my heart in that sense, especially for families who may have children with medical conditions that require a lot of money to care for. So I would say, you know, if you have a local children's hospital or St. Jude's or some place like that, those are always places that are near and dear to my heart. And, you know, just if you're interested in the Timberwolves, check out our coverage at the Star Tribune and follow me on Twitter. And hopefully you'll enjoy the basketball takes I have, along with my takes on music and pop culture, because I love to talk about that, especially if you're a fan of Carole King. She is my all-time favorite artist. So if you follow me on Twitter, expect to see a few takes on her music.
Yeah, she belted out quite a few good ones. Unfortunately, she was a big – my ex-wife was a big Carole King fan, so I lost all the Carole King stuff in the divorce. That's all right, though. the new girlfriend likes reggae, so I, you know, now I'm doing the reggae thing. But he's Chris Hine from the Minneapolis Star Tribune. And again, you can follow him at Christopher Hine. I'm Chris Sheridan. You can follow me on Twitter at Sheridan Hoops. And again, one more plug. This podcast lives on GetMoreSports.com, but the guys paying the bills are out of Costa Rica. And if you go to MyBookie.com and you enter the bonus code BBALL1000, it's all capital letters, BBALL1000, they'll match your first deposit up to $1,000. Then you'll have $2,000. You can play around with that, gamble a little bit, take your winnings, and then donate some of them to St. Jude's Hospital. You'll make my folks happy, and you'll make Chris Hine happy. So, again, Chris, thanks for joining the show, and good luck covering this team for the rest of the season. They've certainly been one of the biggest news-making teams of the entire NBA season, and I'm sure they'll continue to be so, especially over the next month as the coaching situation evolves and as the trade market opens up.
For sure. This is pretty much just the beginning. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. Thanks for having. Thanks for joining us, and we look forward to speaking to you again. So with that, we're going to make it a wrap. Happy Monday night to everybody, and enjoy the games tonight. And with that, we go over and out.